Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Game one of the Western Conference Finals gave us some drama. The local sports scene is in full swing. Welcome to a brand new week of Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive. And let's start by talking about the national sports scene. If you missed it yesterday, the Golden State Warriors pulled one out at home, rallying from a 23-point deficit in a game that was completely changed when Kawhi Leonard went down. 23 points in the third quarter. If that's not a golden opportunity for San Antonio, what is? And I'll tell you, if they take game one, there's a great chance that this series goes six. And that's what San Antonio has to do in order to win the series. It has to go at least six to give them a chance to beat Golden State in game seven. Kawhi Leonard leaves with an ankle injury. Zaza Pachulia, yeah, I guess he did invade the shooter zone. You know, it's something that the NBA has really clamped down on over the last six, 7 years. It's kind of like the halo rule in football. You know, where you got to give the punt returner, you got to give him an opportunity to field the ball, make sure he's not blindsided. Shooter zones are the same thing. And it has been a problem in the NBA, in basketball in general, for as long as I can remember. Is it dirty to slide your foot underneath a jump shooter? Yes, it's dirty, because you're trying to intentionally harm that player. Nothing good can come from that when you slide your foot under the defender. With that being said, I don't think Zaza Pachulia did that on purpose yesterday. I just don't. It's a dangerous play. I've seen it happen before. A couple of players come to mind when you talk about invading shooter zones. Zaza Pachulia does have a history for a quote-unquote unsportsmanlike play. Dante Jones, so dirty when it comes to invading shooter zones. And Bruce Bowen, a guy that Spurs fans love. Spurs fans would go blue in the face to argue with anyone that he was the best defender in the NBA because he had to guard an all-star every night out. Although he developed a reputation for invading shooter zones. And because of Bruce Bowen, the NBA is clamped down on this particular rule. We'll talk more about this later on in the show. We'll go over some comments made by Greg Popovich, which I know Pop's a five-time champion. I get it. I'm just not a huge fan of Greg Popovich, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. The big story, though, here is that Kawhi Leonard will more than likely not play in Game 2. And the only way San Antonio, and again, they got to get to Game 6 to have a chance in this series. I've said that over and over and over. You get to Game 6, you have a chance because you're at home and you can force Game 7. That's logic. One game, you have a chance against Golden State. Without Kawhi Leonard, this team is not going to beat the Warriors. And don't throw the final result of Game 6 at me in Houston, where the Spurs won by 39 points or whatever it was, without Kawhi Leonard. I don't care. It's a completely different beast. Do not compare the Houston Rockets to the Golden State Warriors. Not even remotely the same situation. Plus, you had Houston running a seven-man rotation, and they were solely relying on a 6'5"-2 guard who hasn't played basketball deep into the postseason the majority of his career. It's not even remotely close, so don't compare the two. They cannot win without Kawhi Leonard. They cannot win in this series. Could they win a game without Leonard? Possibly, because I think San Antonio is a lot better than what they get credit for, but they have no chance of beating Golden State in a seven-game series without Leonard. It's not possible. We'll talk more about this series a little bit later on in the show. Also tonight, we will find out who is going to rival the Cleveland Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference Championship. Finally, Game 7, Washington and Boston tonight on TNT. Start time for this game is set for 6 p.m. It's been a back-and-forth game. Can the home team serve once again? The road team hasn't won yet in the series. And Boston had a golden opportunity to knock Washington out in Game 6. John Wall stepped up. was extremely clutch, knocked down a big go-ahead basket, and that'll bring us in to Game 7 tonight at 6 p.m. Let's move on and take a look at the scoreboard for Major League Baseball. Getting ready to start right now, it's the Tampa Bay Rays and the Cleveland Indians. Chris Archer's on the mound for the Rays. He's been great this year, 3-1 with a 3.04 ERA. That start time, it's set right now. 5 o'clock hour, we get Houston at Miami. The Braves will travel to take on the Blue Jays. The Mets on the road to take on the Diamondbacks, who have floated back down to earth just a bit. The White Sox will take on the Angels at 8:07. Also in the 8 o'clock hour, we get the A's at the Mariners, the Brewers at the Padres, and the Dodgers and the Giants go toe-to-toe once again as the Dodgers split with the Rockies, who still remain at the top of the NL West. What do you think of that? Let's move on and take a look at some of the other headlines circulating throughout the national sports scene. Here's a scary one for you. Chiefs rookie quarterback Patrick Mahomes was robbed, uninjured, but he was robbed on Friday, according to the Smith County Sheriff's Office in Texas. According to Daryl Coslin, who's the sergeant, he said one of the suspects in the robbery was acting as if he was armed with a handgun. Mahomes and some of his friends had been out to a baseball game earlier in the evening in Texas. After the game was over, he and his friends returned to one of his houses. They pulled up into the driveway. As they were leaving the vehicle, the suspect pulled up behind them, blocked them in. He got out of his vehicle, approached them on foot, acting as if he was armed with a handgun. Mahomes is fine. The suspect then demanded property from all four victims, and that's where we're sitting at. They're a weird report, but Pat Mahomes is going to be okay. He was unharmed in the robbery. Eddie Lacy, speaking of the NFL, he gets a $55,000 bonus because he weighed in at 253 pounds. This is a real story. Eddie Lacy weighed in at 253 pounds today, and because of that, he gets $55,000 from the Seahawks. Because in his contract, it stated that he had to be under 255 pounds. His agent actually tweeted the results today. His contract contains 7 potential weight bonuses, worth a total of $385,000. Have you ever seen a deal like this in professional sports? Either Eddie Lacy has a problem with his weight, or he's just so unmotivated that teams are trying to pay him to get down to a certain threshold because of the talent that he possesses. He's going to be weighed in once a month from September through December. He has to weigh 245 pounds or less to earn his next bonuses. Pete Carroll said he looks awesome. He looks great. Yeah, I'm sure he does. And the idea of, well, Eddie Lacy just has a hard time keeping weight off. Well, maybe he's unmotivated, because if he can lose weight when there's 55K on the table, and I know that would motivate anyone, but should it really motivate a millionaire professional athlete? He weighed in 231 pounds when he was in Alabama. That was all the way back in 2013. He was up to 267 pounds during one of his free agent visits this offseason. So he's done a great job of keeping off the weight. But at the same time, man, you got to motivate a player with $55,000 to get in game shape. That's insane. We got a fun show lined up for you today. We're going to catch up with Emory Spartan baseball coach Sean Alton. We're going to recap the 2017 season as a whole for Emory. That came to a close this past Friday with a loss to Kanab. The Gunnison Bulldogs win the state championship. They're out of the 2A East with Emory. So Coach Alton will join us to put the final touches on this baseball season for Emory. The Carbon Dinos, they're going to be playing again this week. Coach Jeff Cincinnati will join us a little bit later on in the show. Plus, we'll go over some of the softball results as well. And we have to talk game one of the Western Conference Finals in the aftermath. Greg Popovich is so upset at Zaza Pachulia. We'll play you some audio from that particular incident. And we'll give you a NASCAR update. Crazy race on Saturday. Martin Truex Jr. picking up his second win of the season. That's all coming up on this edition of Drive Time Sports. 107.3 FM, 750 AM, KOAL. We're back after this. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. The Carbon Dino baseball team opened up 3A state championship tournament play on Saturday as they traveled to Park City to meet Desert Hills in the opening round. Carbon suffered a 7-1 loss, putting them in the elimination bracket. But the Dinos responded in a big way as they eliminated Morgan by a final score of 13-2. In a fairly close contest, the Dinos scored 8 runs in the 4th inning, which put the game on ice. Chase Morgan was awarded the win on the hill. He pitched a complete 5-inning contest, giving up just 2 hits and 2 earned runs while striking out 3. The win means the Dinos will continue the season as they return to the field on Thursday to take on Stansbury in an elimination contest. A win there for the Dinos means they would move on to face either Juan Diego or Union. A loss brings an end to the season. Only four teams remain unbeaten in the 3A classification tournament. That's Snow Canyon and Dixie, and Park City and Pineview. Three of those four teams are from Region 9. Park City defeated Desert Hills 1-0. That prevented a perfect weekend for all teams from Region 9. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll continue to bring you exclusive coverage regarding the Kerbin baseball team. We'll catch up with Coach Jeff Cincinnatus later on in the week. We move over to softball, and the Kerbin Lady Dinos also finished 1-1 over the weekend. They lost their first contest to Cedar, the host school, to their pod by a final score of 7-1, but they bounced back in a big way by defeating Logan 10-1. The Lady Dinos were pretty efficient offensively throughout the game. They scored 3 in the 3rd, 4 in the 5th, and 2 more in the 7th. That win means that Kerbin will continue play this Thursday. Their contest on Thursday is scheduled to begin at 3:15 p.m. They'll take on the loser of the Desert Hills and Grantsville contest. The SWAC baseball season came to a close for USU Eastern on Thursday after they suffered an 8-7 loss to Colorado Northwestern. Following that contest, the tournament continued, and the conference champion happened to be the outright winner as well, as the College of Southern Nevada bounced back from the one-loss bracket to defeat Salt Lake Community College not once but twice in the championship game. The season for USU Eastern was a successful one. They were extremely competitive throughout the year. They suffered a heartbreaking one-run loss to Colorado on Thursday. We'll catch up with Coach Scott Mattson later on in the week to recap the entire 2017 season. And as far as the softball bracket goes, the division champion is Salt Lake Community College. They defeated CSI, the same squad that knocked off USU Eastern in the quarterfinals. Salt Lake lost the first contest to CSI 7-1, but they battled back to grab a 2-1 win to win the conference championship. They also won the conference outright. The Price American Legion baseball team will play host to a lasagna dinner fundraiser to help fund the upcoming season on Thursday. The dinner will take place at the Kerbin County Event Center at 6 p.m. The lasagna will be prepared by Sam Farlano, and it will also come with the traditional sides to complete the meal. The cost to eat will be $10 for adults and $6 for children, 12 and under. The team will once again be led by manager Willie Ellington. The Price Raptors will compete in a highly competitive division with Helper, St. George, Pleasant Grove, Corner Canyon, and others. The season itself is scheduled to begin on June 3rd. Get set for a tradition at the Millsite Golf Course. It's the annual Night Golf Tournament. Registration is now open. It'll be on Friday, June 9th. It's a four-person scramble, and the cost is $60 per player. You can call the Millsite Golf Course today at 435-2887 to register. There is a limited number of teams that will be accepted for this tournament, and the outcome is always big. Again, this is the Night Golf Tournament taking place at the Millsite Golf Course on June 9th. You'll find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss the play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
Back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL, 107.3 FM, 750 AM. The 3A high school baseball season is not quite complete. We have one more weekend there. However, it is finished in the 2A classification. The Gunnison Bulldogs, they win the state championship. They knocked off the Grand Red Devils. And those two teams have something in common with Emory. They all are a part of the 2A East Division. Very competitive league throughout the entire season. There were some great battles between Emory, Gunnison, and Grand. The Spartans, on the other hand, they drop a tough game to Kanab, who was the number one seed out of their prospective region. Joining us right now to talk a bit about that game and the season as a whole, we have head coach Sean Olton to wrap up the season. Coach, always a pleasure to get you on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jordan.
Unfortunately, it's the season wrap-up interview, Coach. The year is now in the books, and for Emory, it actually came to a close on Friday. You guys suffered a loss to Kanab in the one-loss bracket. You guys battled, though, Coach. I mean, it's really hard to come back from that one-loss bracket. You guys scored wins over South Summit, Providence Hall, and Enterprise to get to that point. Unfortunately, Kanab was the end point.
It was. You know, the kids performed very well, and looking at that game, the Kanab game, the kids did very well. You know, we had six errors in that game, and if you take the six errors away and the seven runs that they scored based on that, you know, we win that game 4-3. But you know, it is what it is, and I couldn't be happier. You know, it's unfortunately that's where it ended for us.
We'll talk about the logistics of the tournament in just a moment, but to see your team battle back and win three consecutive games faced with elimination, those games, they put you on the edge of your seat, Coach, and for the kids to perform the way they did against Providence Hall, very good team. We're talking about the number one seed from the North region, Enterprise. They may have been the number three seed from the South, but that's a very tough division. You and I had talked about that, and then to go up against Kanab, another number one squad. You guys had a tough road.
We did, and the kids performed exceptionally well. I thought they come alive. They come together as a team. You know, our bats came finally to, you know, in this tournament where they've been kind of at a lull for a couple games, but our bats come alive. We scored lots of runs. A couple emotional games where I saw the kids, you know, really get into it, the fans into it. And it was a very, very fun time, fun tournament.
This was a team that really showed signs throughout the year, Coach. I know you guys did beat Grand. Grand actually went on to the state championship game, lost to Gunnison not once but twice, but that's a team that you guys beat. You hung with Gunnison, probably should have beat Gunnison once. And so at times, this team showed that they were capable of winning a state championship.
Oh, no doubt. And I told the kids from the beginning, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that if we work hard, you know, we swing the bat, we eliminate the errors, eliminate the walks, keep the pitch count down, then we're going to be very, very good, and we will compete at the end. And I couldn't have asked for any more. Like I said, the kids did exceptionally well, and, you know, getting in that one-loss bracket is tough to come back from. And but you know what? I thought they lived up to expectations and even that much more.
As far as that bracket goes, it's not a death sentence because we've seen this team win a state championship falling down to that bracket before. It's just so difficult to do. The past success that this school and this team has had in the one-loss bracket, did that give the kids hope, or did you feel like maybe the enthusiasm and the mentality dipped a little bit?
No. The kids actually mentioned the championship team from a couple years ago where we did come back, and it did give them some enthusiasm, and it did give them some hope. It did.
As far as the seniors, I mean, it's always sad to say goodbye to the senior group. You had a few on this year's squad, and you never want to see a senior end on the short end of the stick. But unfortunately, there's only one team that's going to end their season with a victory, and that's Gunnison. So as far as those seniors go, how did you assess the way they played, not only in the tournament, but throughout the year, Coach?
You know, they did awesome, and I couldn't have asked for any more. They, in my mind, they took this team, they molded it, they put it together, and they had a lot of opportunities to set the example throughout the year, and they did just that. You know, I saw, sitting back, I saw a lot of the young kids really looking up to them, watching what they would say when we come off the field after a defensive situation or playing defense. A lot of our seniors would be the ones in the center talking, as I would be, but I would sit back and watch them and listen to them talk about having heart and playing with intent and doing those kind of things. So it was very, very cool and respectable to sit back and watch these seniors take the helm of this team and watch the rest of them follow suit.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Sean Alton of the Emory Sport and Baseball team. Let's talk about a couple of these seniors. First off, you had two that you really relied on pitching-wise in Tell Gardner and Zach Jorgensen, and unfortunately, you got to say goodbye to these two arms that were solid all year.
Absolutely. You know, they're not going to be replaceable for sure. You know, and I thought Race did a great job stepping in this year as well. You know, there's three good arms right there that we're really going to lose and going to miss. So, you know, hopefully we can get some work done over the winter time and get some other people groomed for next year.
Yeah, Race is one of those arms. It seems, at least in my and from my perspective, looking at the box scores, Coach, he got better throughout the season. I mean, it was an arm that you were able to rely on a little bit more later on down the stretch.
Absolutely. You know, and you nailed it on the head. You know, I thought at first, a couple of outings, he struggled just a little bit. But, you know, his confidence came along, and Race was right there with Tell and Zach, in my mind, right at the end of the year. And he'd come in a couple crucial games. You know, I look at the South Sevier game where Race flat out dominated that game. When we played them earlier in the year, a ranked team, a very good team that made it far in the state tournament. And then, in the Enterprise game where he come in and spelled Tails for those last few innings. You know, he did phenomenal and held down the fort, and he got the win there.
Another senior that batted really well, hit really well for you guys throughout the year is Logan Labrum. He was coming off of an injury, and it seemed like he too got better as the season went on.
He did, but as I look back at the season, Logan was hitting beach balls really all year long. You know, that's pretty much what it looked like to him coming from the pitcher. He was probably the most consistent in my mind hitting the ball, and he just continued to get that much better, and someone that I could rely on with runners on, that I knew without a doubt that he was going to put the ball in play and score a run or two. He was a very tough out all year long. Very rarely did Logan ever strike out.
I don't have the roster in front of me. Off the top of my head, I believe Jordan was the fifth senior, correct?
Correct.
Jordan Beletka for you guys is the fifth senior. I mean, talk about him and what he brought to the team this year, Coach.
You know, Jordan brought a lot of leadership skills. A lot of people looked at him. Very solid catcher and one that we're going to miss. You know, he's been a starter for the last 3 years on the team, and, you know, we're very going to a lot miss his leadership skills and, you know, a leadoff for us at the bat. A lot of times, you know, he was a tough out as well, and we're going to miss the leadership and what he brought to the table as well.
So now that you got to say goodbye to these five seniors, Coach, next year the team is going to look a little bit different. You guys are going to be very young, two seniors returning from this year, next, you know, two juniors, I guess we could say, this year, becoming seniors next season. And to make it a little bit more difficult, you guys got to jump a classification.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're going to be young next year, and it's going to be a whole different dynamic, but I'm optimistic, and I believe that we can compete. I look at the sophomore class, we're very deep in pitching, very deep in skill. So I believe that a lot of those sophomores are going to be able to jump in and fill some holes that I hope that can be filled, and that we can compete next year and get back to the state tournament and just see what happens.
You know, even though we are jumping a classification next year, Coach, at the same time, Grand, Manti, North St. Pete, Richfield, South Sevier, San Juan, I mean, that's Region 15, and those are a lot of familiar opponents. So even though there is a jump in classification, I don't know that the talent level isn't anything that we're not already familiar with.
No, that's correct. You know, other than maybe a couple teams up north, you know, you throw Carbon in the mix that we see once a year, but they'll be in our classification. You throw in a couple other private schools, maybe Grantsville right there and Judge. But other than that, it's pretty much the same. And you're right, you know, the talent level, it should level itself out.
Let's talk about you, Coach Sean Alton, here for a moment. Your first year as a manager, what did you learn this year, Coach? And how much different is it being the head coach opposed to being an assistant?
Very stressful, I'll be honest with you. Very stressful. You know, as an assistant to Coach Gordon, who I admire and respect, he took this team, won a couple state championships. Very, very good coach, knows what to do in the critical times and situations. And so as an assistant, we can sit back and rely on him and what he does. And you just don't know what goes on behind the scenes. And he took care of everything. And so when I look back of what he did, you know, leaving us other coaches stress-free, now taking over, and it's just all the little things behind the scenes you got to worry about and deal with and take care of. And there's a lot of things that people out there just don't know about being a head coach, and the stressful nights and the sleepless nights and worrying about who's going to pitch, you know, here or there, and who's going to bat where, and trying to get a lineup and what's best for the team. And then you got the bus trips you got to worry about, who's going, who's not, grades, motel rooms, you know, just a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, ordering of the uniforms or other apparel. You know, there's just a lot of stuff that you got to worry about, and the timelines that the High School Activity Association places on you for the dead time that's out there and when you can practice, when you can't. So it's very stressful, but you know what? I think it's one of the most rewarding things I've ever been a part of, seeing this team come together and seeing what they did and how they competed, and I have a lot of satisfaction in this first year as a coach.
With that being said, you mentioned the timeline and when you can and can't practice. I mean, what does the off season look like for the Emory baseball team?
You know, I hope some of the kids, and we talked about this, and we're going to continue to talk about it, but get on the baseball field this summer and do some things. I know as a school there's a dead time right around July, right on the 4th of July area, where you can't practice or do anything for a couple weeks, and then we hit that dead time again around November. So, you know, I hope the kids get on the field. I'm going to try to put some things together maybe this summer where we can take some of these younger classmen, underclassmen players, and go do some things, enhance our skills, maybe get ready for next year, just get them back on the field and playing some ball games, and then we're going to hit it hard over the wintertime. You know, we really definitely have to groom the pitching. We've got to have that as a focus, you know, as the new pitching rules, and that's what we have to really focus on next year. I mean, we're going to be young, and we've got a lot of work to do.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, Coach. It really has been fun each week to talk with you and get an update on the team. It's fun to follow you guys. It was a very entertaining season. And again, I think the boys did great at the state tournament considering the circumstances. So I appreciate you always taking out the time to join me on air each week.
You know, absolutely, Jordan. I appreciate your time and what you do for our community and how you cover, you know, the multi-counties. And it's just been really fun to talk with you this year.
Coach, definitely a pleasure. We'll talk again real soon. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Again, that's Emory baseball manager Sean Alton taking out the time to wrap up the 2017 season. It was a successful one for Emory. I mean, they battled tough. You go back, you look at some of the games that they had with Grand and Gunnison, the two teams that participated in the state championship. Emory beat Grand, and they were right there with Gunnison. Probably should have beat them a time or two, no doubt. Congratulations to Emory on the 2017 season. We'll talk more high school baseball a little bit later on in the week. Right now, we got to get out for a quick commercial break, but we do have more Drive Time Sports coming up right after this.
4, 3, 2, 1. Gentlemen, start your engines.
It's now time for a NASCAR series update. And this past Saturday on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, Martin Truex Jr. won the GoBowling400.com at Kansas Speedway. But the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series race ended on somewhat of a sour note after a fiery crash left driver Eric Amarola in a local hospital. Outside of the scary Amarola wreck, there were a series of crashes inside the final 25 laps. Truex Jr. survived them all to win at Kansas after a tough luck prevented him from doing so on two occasions recently when he had the dominant car, but he just couldn't pull it into victory lane. And that's what Truex Jr. talked about during the post-race interview.
It does. I'm not going to lie to you. you know, as a racer, you don't forget. You don't forget those days that that one's got away or you screwed up and gave one away or anything like that. You never forget those things. They always stick with you. So definitely last year was probably the biggest heartbreaker to have the craziest thing happened that you could ever imagine. And, you know, 8 second lead just gone and wherever, I don't even remember where we finished because it was so heartbreaking. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely, definitely sweet redemption tonight. Definitely feels good to be here. And, feel like it's, you know, it's been a long time coming and we definitely earned it, that's for sure.
Brad Keselowski finished in second, followed by Kevin Harvick, Ryan Blaney, and Kyle Busch. Following the race, Keselowski talked about a wild night of racing.
So much happened, I'm not sure I even know. but we were really good all day and just never had a chance to show it. We every time we started to pass cars and cycle up to the front, we had some kind of issue, which was a real bummer to not be able to showcase the strength that we had. So towards the end, we were able to get some runs and make the most of it. And I think we went from, you know, probably 20th with 100 to go to second, which is a pretty big climb in the sport. So that's something to be proud of. But I kind of feel like I would have liked to see if it would have just played out normal. And I think we might have had a shot at him.
Fourth place finisher Ryan Blaney had an excellent night of racing, but could not come away with a checkered flag. He talked about his performance and what went wrong.
We made a lot of changes throughout the race, and we were really loose most of the race. And that'd get worse and worse as the run went on. And 78 and a couple cars seemed to be better than us later in runs. But I felt like we were the best car for maybe 15, 20 laps, especially if we were out front. And we got that caution at the end and beat 78 off pit road. And I thought we were in a pretty good spot. And he made a really good move on that restart and was able to pass us. And then we had a couple more opportunities towards the end of that race. And He got a couple really good restarts, and I didn't.
The NASCAR Monster Energy Cup standings now have Martin Truex Jr. in first place. He has 431 total points, and that includes two wins and seven top 10 finishes. Brad Keselowski is in second. He also has two wins, while Jimmy Johnson is in third with two wins. Kyle Larson, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Kurt Busch, Ryan Newman, Chase Elliott, Jamie McMurray, and Kevin Harvick round out the top 10. NASCAR Racing will make its return to KOAL this weekend as the series shifts to Charlotte Motor Speedway with an all-star race. Start time for this one is scheduled to begin at 5 p.m. Remember, you can continue to follow NASCAR Racing throughout the year on 107.3 FM, 750 AM, and of course on Drive Time Sports.
Listen to Drive Time Sports weekdays 4 to 5 on News Talk, 750 AM, KOAL.
A long three for Thompson, and that is an NBA record. His 10th three-pointer of the night. Thompson fires for three, yes! Golden State by three.
This is Clay Thompson from the Golden State Warriors, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Blessing on KOAL 750 AM.
And less conversation, a little more action, please. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me.
The San Antonio Spurs blow game one following an injury to Kawhi Leonard. The question is Kawhi that valuable? Yeah, I think he is. Still, I don't think that San Antonio should have lost game one even with Kawhi going down, because you held a 21-point lead in the third quarter when it happened. So I don't think the Spurs should have lost this game. But I do think it's a sign of things to come if Kawhi cannot play in this series. You got to remember one thing here. If it wasn't for Russell Westbrook giving us the unicorn season and averaging a triple-double, and for James Harden's offensive numbers to be somewhat inflated based off of the system ran by Mike D'Antoni, Kawhi Leonard's the MVP this year. It's a Spurs team that's older. They haven't had much of a backcourt all season long. Tony Parker was not that great before he suffered a season-ending injury. But now that really hurts because of depth. Patty Mills has really been the most productive point guard on this team. LaMarcus Aldridge, he showed some signs in the postseason, but for the most part, it's been a disappointment. His time with San Antonio has been a disappointment considering the hoopla surrounding his free agency a couple of seasons ago. There's no Tim Duncan, so you're missing a leader in that regard. You have Pau Gasol, who could still spread the floor, but again, this is an older Pau. Look, this team was number two in the NBA for a reason. Kawhi Leonard. He's that good. And one of the things that you'll notice without Kawhi out on the floor, defensively, the Spurs aren't even close to being where they are with him on the floor. I mean, he has the ability to guard the best player on the court in completely different circumstances each time down the floor. I mean, you'll see him guard Draymond one possession. He'll guard Klay Thompson the next. You could put him on Kevin Durant. Like, he's so versatile in that regard that an 18-0 run by Golden State doesn't happen with Kawhi on the floor. Yeah, they make a run, and the game is probably a little bit closer than 21 once we hit the final, but they don't go on an 18-0 run. There's no way. But the talk today is, was that a dirty play by Zaza Pachulia? I'm going to say no. I don't believe it was. Now, I know that Zaza, I know that he has had a history of not really being sportsmanlike. See, but we can't have it both ways in today's game. You can't put a guy down for being too soft and then turn and look at somebody and say he's dirty, because Zaza plays extremely hard. And I think that's a lot of the reason why he was so appealing to Golden State. I know there's been times where he has done things and it looks intentionally bad. I don't believe what happened on Kawhi yesterday. I don't believe it was intentionally dirty, but it did strike a nerve with Greg Popovich. And the reason why it struck a nerve with Popovich is because he knows that his team, despite the fact that they've been playing decent basketball, they can't win without Kawhi. And this injury is going to put Kawhi on the bench for game two. And so Popovich, who was uber competitive and has had a stellar NBA coaching career, knows that his team is in some serious trouble with Leonard on the bench. So I'm sure it does upset him. I'm sure it's frustration. I want to believe that Popovich's rant, which we'll play in just a second, is based more around the fact that he knows his team is shot without Kawhi. And they're also down Tony Parker, and the injuries have just not been fair to this team in the postseason. I want to believe that that's where this rant comes from. Here it is. Greg Popovich talking about Zaza Pachulia, basically calling him a dirty player.
The play where he took Kawhi down and locked his arm in Dallas and could have broken his arm. Ask David West, his current teammate, how things went when Zaza was playing for Dallas and he and David got into it. And then think about the history he's had and what that means to a team, what happened last night. A totally unnatural closeout that the league has outlawed years ago and pays great attention to it. And Kawhi's not there. And you want to know how we feel about it. You want to know if that lessens our chances or not.
He would have played, and they'd have ended up winning. I go get dinner, have a glass of wine, wake up the next day, go to practice, and move on. But this is crap. And because he's got this history, it can't just be, oh, it was inadvertent. He didn't have intent. Who gives a damn about what his intent was? You ever hear of manslaughter? You still go to jail, I think, when you're texting and you end up killing somebody. But you might not have intended to do that. All I care is what I saw. All I care about is what happened. And the history there exacerbates the whole situation and makes me very, very angry.
I guess to really understand where Popovich is coming from, you have to go back and look at the career of Pachulia. And for me, it goes all the way back to 2008. This is when I first started paying attention to Zaza when he first came onto the scene. 2008, the Boston Celtics, they had the big three. They had Garnett, Pierce, and Allen. They went on to win the NBA championship that year. In the first round of the playoffs, they were taken to the brink by Atlanta. The Hawks gave them everything they could handle. And Kevin Garnett, who's one of the greatest trash talkers, one of the most notorious trash talkers in the history of the NBA, was going at Zaza, and he went right back at him. And I remember the media falling in love with Atlanta at that time, because you had Mike Bibby, who was an aging point guard. He was leading that squad. Joe Johnson was fun to watch at that time. And you had a relatively unknown big going right back at Kevin Garnett, who was one of the best players in the league. That right there, that kind of attitude is why Zaza is still in the league today. Now, as he at times maybe crossed the line, yeah, maybe so. But for you old-time basketball fans, you'll appreciate what Zaza brings to the table. I'm not saying you ever want to see anyone get hurt. I'm saying he plays like he's cut from the cloth of the 1980s, early 1990s. Greg Popovich respects that if it's somebody off of his team. Bruce Bowen. I got the quotes for when the league started to look into Bruce Bowen invading shooter zones. Here's a direct quote from Greg Popovich. The people who cry about it are just frustrated about having to go against Bruce. Yeah, probably, because he was notorious for sliding his foot under jump shooters. I'm sure they were frustrated about going up against him. In fact, that comment came following an ankle injury to Steve Francis and later Jamal Crawford. Here's another quote from Popovich. I told Bruce, you be Bruce Bowen. You're the best bleeping defender in this league. You will not change the way you play defense. Stu Jackson, who at that time was in charge of the discipline for players, is not going to change my team just because he thinks he's doing the right thing. There's no way Greg Popovich could sit here today and tell me that Pachulia's history is not at least comparable to Bruce Bowen. Bruce Bowen was known for being a dirty, hard-nosed, gritty defender. And it was something that made the Spurs so difficult because he would guard the best wing player on the opposing team. Nobody's going to ask Greg Popovich about that because this guy has gained popularity not only for his five NBA championships, but for bullying the media and bullying those around him. And I view Greg Popovich as a bully. And again, I want to give the guy the benefit of the doubt and say that he's talking out of frustration with at the moment knowing that his best player was out. But when the shoe was on the other foot, he was defending Bruce Bowen. And I bring up Bowen because it is such a relevant conversation for this particular topic. But I've said this on the show several times. I'm not a Greg Popovich guy. I can respect the fact that he has led one of the most well-oiled machines in the NBA for quite some time. This guy loves the game of basketball, and he's very smart. He's very knowledgeable. But for two decades, the San Antonio Spurs have taken on this identity of being the lovable small market team that just lies in the weeds, but they will beat you come postseason time. During that time, Popovich has become very unlikable in my eyes. I mean, he has five NBA championships, and I think that's a lot of the reason why we give him a pass when he bullies the media. And you see it on TV, but when you see it in person, I mean, I've seen it in person a couple of times, you really just shake your head. But I would be curious to see if he has softened his stance on this whole shooter zone topic. Maybe he has. Again, it wasn't really talked about a lot when Bruce Bolin was playing until the later part of his career, because it's when the league started to clamp down on it. And again, it's like the halo rule in football. And the league really started to look at it and say, okay, he's sliding his foot under jump shooters. We have to put a rule in that says you have to give a jump shooter space in some regard. And that's what they have done. Zaza was asked about it. He said he didn't do it on purpose, and he's not a dirty player.
I did whatever I had to do. I wish he hadn't landed on my foot, and honestly, I had no idea that he had landed on my foot until I turned back and he was already on the ground. I really feel bad for the guy. I wish it didn't happen.
Again, if today you were telling me that what Zaza did was dirty and that he's a dirty player, all you have to do is look at his history, I never want to hear you complain about the league being soft again. You know, I never want to hear old man basketball sit around and talk about the glory days of when Kevin McHale could clothesline Kurt Rambis and not get ejected, or when Bill Laimbeer would pop people in the face with elbows, or Karl Malone would clear out defenders after grabbing a rebound by throwing elbows. You can't brag about those days and talk about when they played the game of basketball and then tell me that Zaza is a cheap shot artist. You can't have it both ways. He's a guy cut from a cloth of 1980s basketball playing in an age of finesse. That's the difference, and that's why he's standing out. Plus, he's a big man to boot, and he plays on a team riddled with talent. That's why we're talking about this. Oh, and the fact that one of the top three players in this series is now out for game two. That stinks from a fan's perspective. But at the same time, it's playoff basketball, and it happens. I don't think he intentionally slid the foot under. Like I said, I mentioned this during the show. Two guys come to mind. Bruce Bowen, Dante Jones. You watch what those guys did every time down court, and then watch Zaza. His eyes weren't even following Kawhi's feet. Game two of the Western Conference NBA Finals. It'll pick back up tomorrow, and we know that there will be no Kawhi Leonard in that contest. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we'll put the final touches and gear up for tonight's contest. Again, Washington and Boston. It's a game seven, highly important. Once these two teams finish tonight, we'll know who Cleveland finally will step back out on the court to play. We're back after this.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're back to the final touches on this edition of the show. It was a fun one today. Got to rant and rave a little bit about Greg Popovich. Look, I respect what that guy has accomplished. I'm just not a Popovich fan. He gets a free pass for winning. And I guess typically in professional sports that happens, right? You get a free pass for bad behavior if you can win. You get a free pass for egotistical behavior if you win. I guess that's just the way it is. I got to thank Coach Sean Alton for always taking out the time again to join us throughout the baseball season. It goes by in such a hurry. They cram so much baseball into a short period of time. Seems like we were just talking yesterday about the start of the season and now the Emory baseball year. It is complete. We'll catch up with Coach Jeff Cincinnatus in the coming days to talk some Carbon Dino baseball. The Carbon Lady Dino softball squad, we got to wish them best of luck as well. They'll continue the season a little bit later on in the week. We will start talking some American Legion baseball. And Coach Willie Ellington, he's expected to join us later on in the week. And we got to catch up with Coach Scott Madsen to put the final touches on the USU Eastern baseball season. So a lot of local sports. It's a fun time of the year, to say the least. I'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. As always, thank you for joining me. Be safe. I am out.